Well, I have a deep theological question for you. Why do you all laugh when I say that? Have you ever seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul? Now, just take a minute and picture that in your mind. Picture the hearse, coffin in the back, on its way to the cemetery with a U-Haul. That doesn't make any sense, does it? It doesn't make any sense because Earth's possessions are fleeting. Once we pass out of this life, the physical things that we have to our name, the physical things that have been entrusted to us to use for the Lord's honor and for His glory, the physical things that we have, our bank accounts, our savings accounts, our investments and our possessions, our houses, our cars, all of these things, we don't have a whole lot of use for them anymore, at least for some time. And I ask this silly little question to demonstrate the nature of Earth's possessions, and that is that they're fleeting. The things of this world last so long, and if the things of this world that we have happen to outlast us, then, well, once we're done lasting, they belong to somebody else. And I want to consider tonight with you the way that we as believers ought to view our material possessions, our material wealth. We're going to take a look at Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24 tonight. And it's important that we understand the context as we drop into really smack dab into the middle of a sermon. And lest you be confused, I don't want you to drop into the middle of a sermon and not know where we're at or where we've been and therefore not know where we're going and get the wrong idea out of all of this. But what we see in the Sermon on the Mount is that Jesus claims to be the source of true righteousness. That is the fundamental driving thought and driving point of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says in chapter 5, Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 to 20. Why don't you turn there, because that really encapsulates all that he's going to say. Jesus says, "Do not think that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, that is, to destroy them or to do away with them, but to fulfill." That is, Jesus says that I came to bring the righteousness that the law and the prophets in the Old Testament demanded of God's people. I came to bring true righteousness. Verse 18, he goes on to say, "For truly I say to you that until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or stroke shall pass from the law until all is accomplished. Whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you, that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, the most quote-unquote righteous people of their day, the religious elite, you will not enter into the kingdom of heaven." Jesus says there is something you need to understand about getting into heaven. There's something that you need to understand about what it means to have righteousness in a genuine, true, and full way. And that is this, that there is no righteousness that you can possess on your own merits that will gain entrance into the kingdom of heaven. There is no way that you can possibly meet the standards that are set out by God for the one to enter into the kingdom of heaven. But it is, and in that, it is a very good thing that Jesus came, because he says, "I am the one who brings true righteousness." And as the Sermon on the Mount unfolds, we see that he brings true righteousness through faith in him, that is, through abandoning all pretense of self-righteousness, that is, through abandoning all religious righteousness or any other means that you may use to try and gain entrance into heaven, and following Jesus Christ. And we talked about this morning the fact that Following Jesus Christ, the message of the gospel and its truth as it ministers in our hearts and in our lives, in our minds, it does not leave us the same. It changes our outlook on life. It changes our outlook on reality, on what we understand to be true, on who we understand that we are, and how we view the world around us. And one of the biggest ways that it changes us is how we look at material possessions. How we look at the things that God has entrusted to us. And Jesus gets at that in Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. So these are the verses that we are going to read tonight, and we are going to study together tonight, and we are going to see in these verses what's been called before the treasure principle. Now, a lot of what I say is not going to be original to myself. And if any preacher ever tells you that everything he says is original to himself, he is probably lying. So all good preachers steal stuff from other people. Good preachers just steal stuff from good people who have said good things. And this is a really nice little resource along the lines of this treasure principle. It's called The Treasure Principle. It's written by a man named Randy Alcorn. So a lot of what we talk about tonight will come from here. It is available in Sound Words. Don't bum rush Sound Words, though, to get it tonight, because I think this is the only copy that we have in stock. So what that means is next week you'll have to come back and get it if you're not the first person in there. So if you're old and slow or prone to be pushed down, maybe just plan on coming back next week, because I'm sure there will be a mad rush to pick up a copy of this. But I can recommend this resource to you wholeheartedly. This is an excellent resource, and like I said, a lot of what we say tonight will be stolen right out of there. But let's take a look at Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24, and we're going to see the treasure principle. Jesus says, and remember, this is part of what it means to follow Jesus Christ, to think about things in line with this. He says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body, so that if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and he will despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." And so what we are going to see from these verses tonight, from this passage, is the treasure principle. And the treasure principle is simply this. And this is taken right out of this book, but this is what we're going to see tonight. The treasure principle states that you can't take it with you, but you can send it ahead. What these verses tell us tonight is that you can't take your material resources, your material wealth, your material possessions with you when you die. But there is a very true sense, there is a great opportunity where you can send your wealth ahead. This passage breaks up into two sections. The first section is in verses 19 to 21. And in these verses, we're going to see the principle stated. Okay, so we'll see the treasure principle stated. Let's read verses 19, 20, and 21. Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Jesus, at the very beginning of this passage, in these verses, gives us certain instructions as to how we're to think about the things that we value highly. And that's really the idea here of treasure. He repeats the idea several times through the verses. And so we can see that's the prime idea. That's the key concept here. We're talking about what it is that we treasure. And a treasure is simply this. It is whatever it is that we think is of exceptional value and go to great lengths to keep safe, whatever it is that we value highly and go to lengths to keep safe, what do you do with things that are clearly valuable in this life? What do you do with your, what do you do when you go to a hotel and you've got your jewelry or you've got all sorts of things? You keep them safe, right? You may even throw them into the hotel safe if you have something that's of particular value. So that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's talking about what we hold in high value, in high regard. And he actually doubles up on this idea of treasure, because when he says don't store up, but instead store up in verses 19 and 20, that verb store up, it means to set something aside, to accumulate it, and it's actually the verbal form of the word that we have translated here, treasure. So we could actually translate this something like, don't treasure up for yourselves treasures on earth. But instead in verse 20, treasure up for yourself treasures in heaven. And when a Bible author doubles down like this, when he uses the same word in two different forms, right in the same context, he is really drawing our attention to that idea. So at the heart of this treasure principle is, what do we find valuable? And then how do we act in light of the value that we place on these things? And the first thing that Jesus tells us in verse 29 is, you can't take stuff with you. You can't take stuff with you. He says, don't store up for yourself. Don't treasure up for yourselves treasures on earth. The goal in life here is not to accumulate the goods of this life. The goal in life ought not to be to have the biggest bank account, to have the nicest car, to have the coolest house, to have the nicest clothes, the most comfortable clothes. The goal in life ought not to be to store these things up for ourselves. Now, clearly, Jesus is not saying that we shouldn't save and be wise and frugal in the way that we live. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 8 talk about the fact that we ought to work hard to provide for what we need, and we ought to save, and we ought to be wise in how we use the resources that have been entrusted to us. But Jesus says that this cannot be, as a follower of Jesus Christ, this cannot be the be-all and end-all of life. You cannot go about life trying to just accumulate more. And Jesus gives us a very good reason for that. He says, you shouldn't spend life like this, because if you do, you are a fool. If you do, you are storing up things that devalue, that get taken away, that break, and ultimately, after this life, you will have no use for. What does he say? Don't treasure up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed this about stuff? What happens if you just leave stuff alone? Does it stay nice? Does it stay in good shape? Does it continue to work well? No. Stuff breaks, right? What happens if you don't work to keep your car up? If you don't change the oil, if you don't put in gas, if you don't take it to the mechanic to get it tuned up, if you don't fix the little things that go wrong, things break just because of age, if nothing else. It's part of the curse. Things because of sin and because of sin's presence in the world, things fall apart. Things fall apart. Things don't get more orderly and more orderly and more orderly. They break down. And Jesus says, if you take your entire life and you devote it to stuff in this world, you are investing in devaluing assets. Even money works this way. What happens if you take money and you put it in a savings account? You know what actually happens to that money the vast majority of the time? It gets less valuable. You know why? Because stuff starts to cost more and more and more and more. So all of this stuff that you've saved up, all of this wealth that you've compiled in your bank account, now you financial guys are sitting out there going, that's why you invest it. And yes, that's clearly why you invest it. But that doesn't illustrate my point, so. But you understand that things of this earth and things of this world and material goods and material things, they go away. They break down. They become less valuable. They decay. They don't last. And so if you spend your life chasing these things, if you value these things above all other things, if you have the goal of accumulating the most stuff, you're a fool. You are spending your time, your money, your energy, your resources pursuing things that will just go away. And like I said, if they happen to outlast you, if your bank account outlasts you, if your car is still running after you die, if your house is still standing after you're gone, guess what? It won't be yours anymore. There's a famous story about John D. Rockefeller. He was an extremely, extremely rich man on the East Coast in the United States after the turn of the century. But after he died, a bunch of reporters were gathered around and they were all writing about Rockefeller's death. And one of the reporters looked at Rockefeller's accountant. And he was curious about how much John Rockefeller was actually worth. And he asked the accountant, how much did John Rockefeller leave? And the accountant looked up at the reporter and he said, he left all of it. He left all of it. It's gone. Rockefeller has no more money. Because he has passed on from this world. We see in this first verse that you should not treasure up treasure on this earth because it is a losing investment. It's an investment that is guaranteed to lose value. Because this stuff goes away. Instead, Jesus says in verse 20, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in or steal. You'll notice here what he says. He says you can't take it with you, but you can do things in this life to send value ahead of yourself into the next. You can't take your wealth with you, but you can send it ahead. He says instead, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. That's the same idea, only in the positive instead of the negative. Treasure up for yourselves treasures in heaven. I take it in the context, what he's saying here, the instruction that Jesus is giving is this. Use your earthly resources for eternal purposes. I think that's the instruction that Jesus is giving here. Use your earthly resources for eternal purposes. And when you do that, you can leverage this temporary stuff into eternal assets of eternal value. He says, store up for yourselves, treasure up for yourselves these treasures in heaven. Remember what that means. The idea here is what you hold valuable. He says, when you look at life, and when you look at not only life on this side of eternity, but when you look at life for all of eternity, you need to value the things that will bring value to you forever and ever. And ever and ever. and ever and ever and ever and ever. Here is the investment opportunity of a lifetime. You get these, do you get the implication of what's going on here? Jesus says there is a way that you can use your material resources, your temporary resources that here on earth rust, decay, they're taken, they are left here when you die, and you can leverage those resources into eternal value for yourself. And this eternal value is a value that is sure. One of the first things that an investor will tell you is don't invest money that you are not willing to lose, right? You should not invest money, because investing money in the stock market or whatever market you want to invest money in here today, there is risk involved. It may go away. You can have the safest portfolio, the most conservative portfolio in all the earth, and everything could collapse and you could be penniless tomorrow. But that is not a risk when we are investing in what is of eternal value. What does Jesus say about these treasures in heaven? Neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves do not break in or steal. Jesus describes, or Peter in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 4, describes the inheritance of the one who has sent this ahead as imperishable, undefiled. He says it is an inheritance that will not fade away. It won't lose value. It won't go away. It won't fall apart. It will always be there. And it is being protected by God for those who have faith in him. Jesus says that when we have been entrusted material resources, when we have been entrusted material wealth here on earth, by the way, we are not just talking about money, we're talking about any of the resources that we've been entrusted, our possessions, our time, our energy, our talents, all of those things I would say fall under this very same treasure principle. But Jesus says here, when we've been entrusted with these, we have the opportunity to invest these things for all eternity. By using the resources that God has entrusted to us in a manner that is pleasing to him. By using the resources that he has entrusted to us in a manner that is pleasing to him. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 10 to 15 say that we will all of us who are saved, will stand before Jesus Christ one day, and he will judge the quality of our works. He talks about building with wood, hay, and straw, or with stones and metals and things of precious value. He says the things that stand in those judgment, the actions that we take in this life that stand in that judgment, that say this is a quality action, this was done in order to serve the Lord, in order to be pleasing to him, those things will result in eternal reward for us. There's another example you can write down in Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 12. You have a parable about a steward, a man who has been entrusted with another man's wealth, with another man's fortune, and this steward was lazy. He didn't do anything with the money. He didn't invest it. He didn't make his master any money back. And the master one day comes to the steward, and he says, "You are a lazy steward. You are good for nothing. You're fired. Get out of here." And the steward goes, "Oh, man. I am too weak to dig. I'm too proud to beg. What am I going to do?" And so what does that steward do? He goes to all the people that owed his master money. He says, "How much do you owe my master?" One says, 100 things of oil. And he says, "Write the check for 80 and we'll call it good." And then he goes to another person and says, "How much do you owe my master?" 60 pecks of wheat. And he says, "Okay, write it for 40 and we'll call it good." Do you see what the steward is doing here? He's using material wealth to gain friends for himself. And then the master comes back and he says to the steward, "This is what I wanted you to do all along. Not rip me off, but I wanted you to be smart with the way that you were using the resources that had been entrusted to you. I wanted you to use these resources in a way that was beneficial for me, in a way that gained for me." And you know what Jesus takes out of this parable? Do you know the application that he gives? He says, we Christians are sometimes dumb in the way that we use money, in the way that we use our material resources. He says, we are not often wise. We don't use the resources that God has entrusted to us materially in order to serve Him, in order to win friends so that we can be a testimony for Jesus Christ. He says, if you are smart, if you are wise, if you are a good steward of what God has entrusted to you, you will use the material resources that He has given to you in order to serve Him. Now, this takes all kinds of different forms. Just to name a few, giving to the church and giving to the ministry, using the things that you have to build friendships and build relationships, commonalities, using the things that God has entrusted to you, that He has given to you in a way that recognizes that the things that you have and the things that you enjoy are a gift from God's hand and being thankful to Him for that. Did you get that? God has given us things to enjoy, and He expects us to enjoy the things that He's given us in a manner that makes us thankful to Him for having done so. And that's pleasing to the Lord. That's taking these resources that God has entrusted to us and using them in a manner that is pleasing to Him. And so, in a sense, very often we as believers are able to have our cake and eat it too, if we recognize the good hand of God and His generosity toward us. So you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Now in verse 21, there's a notable effect to handling material resources in the way that we ought to. In verse 21, Jesus points out why it's so important for us morally that we use the resources that God has entrusted to us in a manner that is pleasing to Him, in a manner that is honoring to Him. And that effect is this: treasure has gravity. Treasure has gravity. Treasure pulls our hearts. The things that we value, the things that we hold in high regard, the things that we think are important, they influence the way that we think and the way that we act and the way that we go about life. They influence us. Look what He says in verse 21. Jesus says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven rather than treasures on earth, because, verse 21, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, if we're not careful when we read this, and I have been guilty of this myself, we might read this verse and say, okay, whatever it is that we value, that's what we're going to treasure up. And we're going to invest in whatever is important to us. And while that's true, what you spend your time and your energy and your money and your resources doing and investing in, that does demonstrate what you hold valuable. That's not what Jesus is saying here. Jesus is saying here that where you are invested, your heart and your mind will care about that. It will be drawn to that. He says, where your treasure is, where you invest your resources, where you accumulate wealth, there your heart will be also. Your affections will be drawn there. You will care about what happens in that realm, and you will pay close attention to it. If you don't believe me, I dare you to try this experiment, okay? If you don't believe me, take out every dollar out of your bank account and leverage whatever money you can get out of any of your possessions and invest it all in one company. Okay? Invest it all in one company. And I see a couple of you guys. Andy, I see you going, don't do things like that. Guess what? When you wake up tomorrow morning, you're going to care an awful lot about what's going on with that company, aren't you? And when you wake up the next morning, you're going to continue to care an awful lot about what goes on with that company. And you're going to do everything that you can to try and understand the company that that industry is in, and the industry that that company is in. And you're going to work to see, and you're going to care when they appoint a new CEO, and you're going to care what profits they're making or the products that they're making that are losing money. That you might kind of live or die with some of those things. You see, treasure has gravity for our hearts. The things that we value, when we store them up in one place, we care about that place an awful lot. You care about that place an awful lot. Do you have problems? Is it a struggle for you to care about your inheritance in heaven? Is it hard for you to think a lot about when Jesus Christ will return? Is it hard for you to think more about reading the scriptures and praying and doing the work of ministry and serving one another? Is it hard for you to think about those things instead of, I don't know, the football game? There's an answer for you here. Invest heavily in heaven. Because where you have invested your time and your energy and your money and your stuff, and where you have built up wealth, your heart will be pulled to that place. So you'll note here, this is a two-edged sword, right? If you've spent your entire life accumulating material wealth and trying to have the nicest car or the biggest house or the most comfy clothes or whatever it is, where's your heart going to be? It's going to be here in your car, in your clothes, in your house, in your stuff. But if you have spent your time, your energy, your resources, your money, everything, when you have put everything into serving the Lord and into accumulating wealth in heaven, to building up your heavenly bank account, that's where your heart will naturally be drawn. And God has designed this to build on itself. So the more you invest there, the more you're drawn there, and the more you're drawn there, the more you invest there, and the more you invest there, and the more you're drawn there, and so forth and so on. Now let me say again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't buy things here on earth, that you shouldn't have nice stuff if the Lord has blessed you, that you shouldn't enjoy the things that God has entrusted to you, because God's entrusted things to us to use for His service, to use to serve Him, to use so that we can enjoy and enjoy it as a gift from His hand. But be very, 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 very careful that the things that God has entrusted out of kindness to us so that we could love Him and serve Him and appreciate His provision for us, they must not be the end game. That is a good way to have hearts broken, and it is a good way to have meaningless lives. What did Solomon say in Ecclesiastes? He said, look, I tried all of this stuff as an end in and of itself. If it was money, if it was pleasure, if it was fame, if it was prestige, if it was power, I did it. And when I did it with these things as the end, when I treasured these things in my heart, I looked at it all and I said, it's vain. It's vanity. It's going away. It doesn't really bring satisfaction in and of itself. And ultimately, it goes away. But do you know what his conclusion is? Do you know what he says? Here's where I found value. When I enjoyed the labor that God had given me, the wife of my youth, and the things that I got from the labor as a gift from His hand. And this is pleasing to the Lord. And this accumulates treasure in heaven. So there's the principle stated. The treasure principle stated is this: you can't take it with you, but you can send it ahead. And now in verses 22 to 24, Jesus illustrates this principle. He illustrates this principle in two ways. First, he talks about having clear eyes and a full heart. And then he talks about the principle in regards to slavery. So we have in verses 22 to 24 the treasure principle illustrated. Let's read verses 22 to 24. The eye is the lamp of the body. So then, if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Jesus illustrates this principle essentially by twice saying, there's no halfway here. Okay? There's no halfway in treasuring up treasure on earth versus treasuring up treasure in heaven. You cannot have it both ways. The follower of Jesus Christ must be wholeheartedly devoted to using the material resources that he has entrusted to him in a way that is pleasing to the Lord. And the first illustration here has to do with the eyes and the light that they let in. And clear eyes here means a full heart. Verse 22 says, the eye is the lamp of the body. So then if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? The imagery here is striking. He says the eye is the lamp of the body. And what he's talking about here, he's drawing an illustration. The eye here is how we evaluate what's around us. Obviously, the eyes are how we take in a great deal of the information that we use to process what's happening in the world. We look and we see. And that affects how we live, how we go about life. So the eye is what takes in the information here, and the body is the whole of how someone conducts himself. So what we see, the way that we take in information and perceive information and grab information to make decisions with, this affects how we go about life. And there is an enormous difference if we see with clear eyes versus seeing with cloudy eyes. And Jesus here illuminates or illustrates the need for us to see with proper evaluation. If the eye is clear, that word clear literally means single. Okay? That word clear here literally means single. So what I believe Jesus is talking about here is a clarity of focus, a singularity of the way that we look at life. Jesus is saying here, if that you see with a clarity of single-minded devotion to Christ, then your entire body, the way that you conduct yourself, will be full of light. There's a certain clarity. When we look at finances and we look at resources, materially speaking, and even things like our energy and our time and those types of resources, there are lots and lots of things that are vying for those resources, aren't there? Sometimes it can be confusing to understand what's the best thing to do with these resources. How should I invest my money? How should I spend my time? How big a house should I buy? How nice a car ought I to buy? How do I balance all of the priorities of life as I decide where to spend my time, where to spend my energy, where to spend my money, where to spend my resources? And if we are not clear about our priorities in life, if we do not have a clarity and a devotion and a commitment to following Jesus Christ and to what that looks like, then making decisions about how you spend your resources will be impossible, at least impossible to do it well. If you don't know what your priorities ought to be, if you don't know the end goal of using your resources, then anytime it comes time to make a financial decision or a decision about how you're going to spend your time, where you're going to go, what house you're going to buy, what job you're going to take, how you're going to spend your energy, what ministries you're going to serve in. You might as well just cover your eyes, take the dart out, and toss it at a board with all the possibilities. Because it won't work. Jesus says that in order for us to be full of light, in order for us to act as we ought to act, in order for our bodies to use our bodies as we ought to use them, we need to be devoted to think in line with the Lord's priorities. We need to seek this treasure principle and say, look, I understand that there are certain things in this life that I can't take with me, but I can use these things in order to serve and to please the Lord. So that should be my first question. That should be my dominating question. How can I use this resource, this time, this money, this energy, this whatever it is, in order, to put it in the language of this morning's passage, in order to further the administration of God? In order to serve for the furtherance of the gospel of Jesus Christ, in order to serve the Lord and His people, in order to reach the lost, in order to do the things that God has called me to do, in order to be a good husband, in order to be a good wife, in order to be an obedient child, in order to whatever the case may be, how is going to be the best way to marshal these resources to be the best at what God has called me to be? What is going to be the most effective way that I can use these resources in pleasing the Lord? And if this is your mindset when it comes to making any decisions about how you're going to spend your resources, the promise here is this. If your eye is clear, if you are singular of focus, then your whole body and the way that you use that body will be full of light. You will be pleasing to the Lord in the way that you go about life. You will have clarity and specificity of mind that says, this is how we want to go forward. Now, that doesn't mean there won't ever be difficult decisions. Should I take this job or that job? Should I buy this house, that house? Should I eat at McDonald's or should I eat at Val's? These are all difficult decisions sometimes, and we've got to make them. But we should always first and foremost say, what is going to allow me to use my resources to the greatest benefit of my service for the Lord? The flip side is found in verse 23. If your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light that is in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? If your eye is bad, literally that word is evil. And this is probably especially with respect to how we view money and material things. And remember, the opposite here of bad is this clear. And so what does it mean to have a bad eye? It means to have mixed priorities. It means to try to ride the fence here and say, I want to build up as much wealth here as I possibly can, but then also I know that I should probably value the things that are in heaven, and so I'm going to try and walk the tightrope. That doesn't work. It does not work that way. If you are mixed in your priorities, if you are not straight in your priorities, if your number one goal is not to serve the Lord with the material resources that He has entrusted to you, you are doomed to failure in the way that you use those resources. Now, I'm not saying that you won't get rich. And I'm not saying that you won't gain power and prestige, and I'm not saying that you won't have a huge, nice house, but ultimately, in the eyes of the Lord, if you are doing those things with those things as an end, you will fail. Because God says, that's not how I've designed things to work. If you are seeking satisfaction and pleasure and wholeness and all sorts of things like that in accumulating great things, if you are seeking security in life by having a huge retirement account, you will fail. Because you're asking material possessions to do things that God never designed them to do. You're looking for things that God says are found in Him and in Him alone, and in serving Him and serving Him alone. You're asking things that God has made to be used that way to do something totally different. Don't be a fool. Don't be a fool. Be single-minded in the way that you are devoted to using your material resources. Use them in a way that are pleasing and honoring to Him. Now, we need to stop here and put this whole thing on pause and say that if you do not know Jesus Christ, if you are not devoted to Him, if you are not committed to following Him, if you don't have saving faith in Jesus Christ, then this is impossible for you. If you have not recognized your sin before a holy and righteous God and the separation that that brings between you and Him, if you have not abandoned all attempts at self-righteousness and come to Jesus Christ saying, I trust in who you are and what you've done for me to make me righteous and to give me a new mind and to give me a new heart, then your eye is bad. It just is. That's what God says about you. He says that you're lost in your sin. That you are given over to your sin. That you have no idea how to please the Lord. You have no capability of pleasing Him. But the promise is that because of who Jesus Christ is and the fact that He has brought righteousness in His person and through His work, that if you are willing to turn from your sin and to follow Him completely, to place your faith in Him, that means the same thing. To place your faith in Jesus Christ in a saving way is to be devoted to Him. It's a commitment to follow Him. He says, if you are willing to do that, I can cleanse you. I bring true righteousness. And along with that righteousness that comes is the ability to have a clear eye, is the ability to be totally devoted to the Lord and to serving Him, regardless of whether He's entrusted to me a great amount or a little amount, whether He's entrusted that to me to use by giving it all to missionaries or giving it all to the church or to investing it so that there's more to use to serve Him, whatever the case may be, there's great freedom in following Christ and how we invest our resources. But we must be totally devoted to using those resources in a way that's pleasing and honoring to the Lord. And there is a second illustration that Jesus gives here in verse 24, and it drives home the absolute necessity of the singularity of focus in this treasure principle. And this is the picture of slavery. Verse 24 says this, no one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. No one can serve two masters. The picture here is of a slave-master relationship. Slavery in the Roman world in Jesus' day was not exactly like slavery in America as we think about it. But the idea of ownership and the idea of service are certainly included here. And so the expectation is that the slave is owned by his master and will serve him totally and completely, wholly. That he will be devoted to doing what his master calls him to do. That he will be devoted to using his time, his energy, his resources, everything as his master has called him to do. And Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. You can't be the slave of two people. Right? There will invariably be competing demands made on you. And I don't know if you've ever noticed, but you can't be in more than one place at a time. You can't do more than one thing at once. Some of us that's more true of than others. My wife can multitask like nobody's business, but if you ask me to walk and chew gum. But that's not what I'm talking about here. You can't serve two people at once. It's impossible. He explains why. Jesus says why. He'll hate one and love the other. It's probably in a comparative sense. He'll be devoted to one and despise the other. It's simply impossible to devote yourself on more than one front. Can't do it. Doesn't work. because one master is going to demand one thing and the other master is going to demand exactly the opposite, and you can't do both things and serve both masters. The way that you are going to use your material resources is an all or nothing game. Okay? You are either all in or all out here. The devotion is either I will serve the Lord with the resources that He has entrusted to me, or I will serve the resources that the Lord has entrusted to me. There is a demand here of singular service, wealth, possessions, money, everything that falls under the category of what we've been called here. This is a statement, the end of verse 20. He says, you cannot serve God and wealth. Just like a slave cannot serve two masters, we cannot serve both God and wealth. We cannot treasure up treasures on earth and treasures in heaven at the same time. This is a statement, I believe, at the end of verse 24, both a statement about man and a statement about God. We're incapable of serving two masters as humans, but it is impossible to serve the Lord while trying to serve someone or something else. That is not the type of service that God will accept. Do you understand that about God? Did you know that 23 times, this was a look at a concordance, a quick look, so it may not be exact, but I counted 23 times God says, I am jealous, or the Bible talks about the jealousy of God. In fact, in Exodus 34:14, God says that His name is jealous, with a capital J. That's my name. What He is saying here is, I will not accept your partial service. It is not okay for you to serve me and someone else. Will not accept it. It is not service of me, God says. God says, I demand absolute loyalty. And understand that anything that you set before the Lord, anything that you set alongside of the Lord, and you say, I'm going to serve that, I'm going to bow down to that, is in essence an idol. Anything that you make a priority over your service of the Lord is in essence an idol. What does God think about idols and idolatry? You're not having any of that. The call to serve and to follow Jesus Christ, the call of the gospel of Jesus Christ, is a call to follow Him completely. And the call to the righteousness that is found in Jesus Christ is a call that cannot be taken part way. It is a call to take up your cross and die to yourself and to follow Him. So we see tonight that you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And the way that you can take these temporary, decaying, dying, going away, devaluing resources and leverage them into eternal value that is imperishable, undefiled, will not fade away, and is defended in heaven for you, is by being singularly devoted to serving the Lord with the resources that He has entrusted to you. That is the greatest investment opportunity in the history of the world. That says you can take something that is fading away, that is going away, that is breaking down, that is temporary and will be burned up, and by simply being totally devoted to Jesus Christ and devoted to service of Him, you can turn those things into eternal value. The gospel of Jesus Christ makes a difference. It makes a difference in how we view life. It makes a difference in how we think about the things that are going on around us. It makes a difference in how we evaluate, how we weigh out the importance of different things. And the call of this treasure principle is to recognize that the stuff in this world, God has graciously entrusted to us. Not so that they could be the end all, not so that they could be the things that we would pursue, but so that we could use them to serve and to honor Him. This will take many, many different forms as you go about life. It'll take the form of giving. It'll take the form of being generous. It'll take the form of meeting other people's needs. It will take the form of serving the Lord with your time and your energy and your possessions. It will take the form of simply enjoying the things that God has entrusted to you as a gift from His hand. But we must, as we think about these things, must be wholly devoted to serving the Lord with all of the things that He's entrusted to us. Let's pray. Father, we thank You so much for Your goodness toward us. We thank You for the provisions that You have made. Father, You are so kind and generous in the ways that You have provided for us. Lord, help us to recognize that the fruit of the labor that we do here on earth, the things that we have, the money that we have in our possession, the resources that You've given to us, the time that You've entrusted to us is all a gift from Your hand, and that You expect us to use these things to serve and to honor You. Lord, I pray that we would be characterized by a wholehearted and singular devotion and commitment to using these things that You've entrusted to us to Your honor and glory. Lord, help us to be thankful, to enjoy the things that You have given to us to enjoy. Help us to, Father, truly enjoy them as gifts from Your hand. Lord, may You be honored by the way that we consider the things, the material things in this world. And I pray that we would be faithful to leverage those things into eternal value in a way that's pleasing and honoring to You. We pray these things in Your Son's precious name. Amen.